There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Welcome back to the show. The sun is shining down here at Barasti. We are at the rooftop terrace. If you are at a loose end, do pop on down. The action is on the big screen. So much sport to keep an eye on across today. There is the small matter of the Dubai World Cup. It's ongoing down at Maidan Racecourse. We'll have updates throughout. The Indian Premier League ongoing. The early kickoff in the English Premier League as well. And upcoming over the course of the next 20 minutes, we've got a good friend of ours, Dale Gordon, is going to be joining us. And he's got his full squad here, all to be revealed on all of that in just a few moments time. I want to start, if I can, update from the Indian Premier League. Kings 11 Punjab, they're in action against the Mumbai Indians. Mark Archer.
Yeah, this match is coming live from Chandigarh. It's Mumbai taking on Kings 11 Punjab. Mumbai batted first in their 20 overs. They compiled 176 for 7. Quinton de Kock, the top scorer there, the South African, leading the way with 60. In reply, I can say that Kings 11 Punjab are off to an absolute flyer. They've just lost their first wicket. They are 53 for 1 after 7 of their 20 overs. I'll tell you who is dismissed shortly. So they're going along well, 53 for 1. They require another 124 runs, 9 wickets remaining, and 12 overs to get them in. Late match in the IPL tonight. It's coming from Delhi. It's the Capitals taking on the Calcutta Knight Riders.
It certainly is. Early kickoff in the English Premier League. Manchester City bidding for a historic quadruple. One down, three to go. Looking to go 1 point clear of Liverpool at the top of the table. They're in action against the team currently languishing 19th in the Premier League. It is Fulham. Matthew Fortune.
Yeah, Chris, no further trouble to the scorers since you last joined me. So we're about 38 minutes gone and it's still 2-0 to City. That being said, that the Champions election should have had a penalty in my view about 5 minutes ago. Raheem Sterling jinking in from the left-hand side with scythe down by Cyrus Christie, but referee Kevin Prehn gave nothing. At the other end, Ryan Sessegnon has gone close for the hosts.
It certainly has. 37 minutes gone then. Fulham 0, Manchester City 2. Very quickly, Archie, European Cup, Champions Cup that is. It is, of course, rugby over in the Northern Hemisphere. Give us an update.
Yeah, quarter-final action today in the European Champions Cup. Early kickoff is underway. It's Edinburgh hosting Munster and it's 0-0 after 15 minutes. Late kickoffs, we'll see Saracens take at home to Glasgow Warriors and Leinster will face Ulster. But I know we're going to get to Disco Dale and his dancing troupe.
We are getting to his dancing troupe right now because let's welcome Dale Gordon into the conversation now. Good friend, long-time listeners will have heard this man's dulcet tones time and time and time again. A man that represented Norwich City with great distinction. Went up to Scotland, as he'll tell you very quickly, only lost one match. So he did. That was against Dundee and I think it was a 7-goal thriller, if memory serves me correct. He then popped down West Ham as well, had a little spell at Bournemouth, and he's now over here in the desert. He calls Dubai home. Disco Dale, Dale Gordon, very good afternoon, my friend.
Good afternoon, Chris. What an introduction that was.
Well, that's the only introduction I can give you, my man, because you, of course, have played the game at the highest level. Fantastic player as you were, you've now moved into the world of coaching, and I've got an awful lot of faces staring back at me right now, Dale.
No,
a lot of smiley
faces.
You've moved into coaching, DG Pro FC. Talk to us a little bit about it.
Absolutely, yes. It's my seventh year now in Dubai. I came over here and worked for another football academy for 3.5 years. And as I stepped away from that, obviously done some media work for yourselves with the Euros. And thoroughly enjoyed that. And during the summer, decided to set up my own academy. And 3 years into it, we have a good group of boys. But also as well, we'd like to take the boys away as well to abroad. And last year was a very successful trip to the UK, to Norwich, one of my old teams, as you mentioned. A very successful trip. We took 12 boys away with us, mainly from our under-12s, and they had a very they played Norwich City, which we beat Norwich City's development team 7-0. We played Ipswich Town's elite team, which we came out losing 6-1, and we played Cambridge United as well, which won 4-3. The boys entered the tournament as well, a two-day tournament at the end of the trip as well, and we came third place, and it was just a fantastic sort of like 10 days away with the group. And it's a testament to all their hard work they put in training. They train twice a week, hour and a half each time, matches at the weekend, and they've picked up a few silverwares as well. So the apartment at home at the moment hasn't got much space left for any more silverware.
Well, listen, it does seem a bit quiet, but I can promise you there are kids down here. Guys, it's your turn, make some noise so the listeners can hear. They are here. They certainly are. They're here in force. You mentioned there that you took the boys away last year. Before we get into what you're up to this year, give us an appraisal of these kids, because I know from speaking to yourself, I think there's 60 plus football academies right here in Dubai. The reputation that your boys have, it precedes them. Everyone I talk to, whether it's Chris Brown, whether it's Terry Kidd, everyone says that your kids are one of the best team. There's a few players, and I'm going to say all of them because they're all staring at me right now, who've got a good chance of making it, aren't they?
Well, absolutely. And it's a nice testament from other academies that you get that that reward and that feedback from them. You know, the most important thing from my point of view is I want to make sure that these all our players, not just the players that are sitting here there today, obviously we've had players that go on for a two-week break, but all of them make to feel that they're little professional footballers. And this is the reason why we travel abroad. It's not just about, you know, what happens on the pitch, it's how they conduct themselves off the pitch, how they turn up at training. Yeah. It's about, you know, the way we obviously will be flying. No, don't get me wrong, not going first class.
Maybe but, next year.
Yeah, maybe next year. But no, they are they're a great group. And, you know, it's nice the fact that the seasons that we've had over the last 3 years, you know, they've been successful in every age group. And, you know, they're very, very focused. But the most important thing is they enjoy each other's company. They're a great group of boys and they have fun. And if you've got that installment in them, they'll get success.
Yeah, there's no doubt. They're all wearing smiles on their face. Let's bring a couple of them into the conversation now. I'm delighted to say, and I think we've heard from this young man, I think it was last year we actually spoke to him. Mm. It is Eric, club captain, under 13 captain as well, looking resplendent in his DG Pro FC kit as well. I will say a very good afternoon, Eric.
Good afternoon.
It's nice to see you again. Dale has talked eloquently about you guys. He's obviously given you praise. This is your chance. He's told me you will not get a club fine. What kind of coach is Dale? Is he a good coach?
Be
a bad
careful,
coach?
Eric. Careful, Eric.
What kind of coach is he, Eric?
Very good coach.
He's paid you to say that, hasn't he? But talk to me about it. What about you and your development? Have you enjoyed being part of DG Pro FC?
I mean, I've been with Dale for 6 years.
Wow. He's like your second father.
No.
But you've enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's I think me and Ali was with Dale for 7 years. I was with Dale for 6 years. It started in IFA, and then we had a group of boys, and then we just moved to DG Pro. Well, Dale made his own company.
You followed him. Why, Eric? I know it's maybe a bit of a difficult question at the reasons for that, but why were you so passionate? Why were you so committed to working with Dale?
One, because I've known him for so long and like I trusted that it would be a good club.
And then secondly, because he's got good jokes. He's quite
amazing
funny.
Jokes,
and he's a terrible dancer, but his jokes are actually okay, Eric. I want to bring another young man into the conversation now, because from one captain to another, captain of the under-11s, it is Harry. And I believe, Harry, I've been told that you hail from Aberdeen, so you're already my favourite of DG Pro FC, because I've got that Aberdeen Scottish accent as well. Harry, first and foremost, good afternoon. Nice to see you.
Good afternoon.
Dale, talk to me about him. Do you enjoy playing under Dale? You've got to be careful, because Dale is staring at you. I'm aware of that, Harry.
Yeah, but I haven't made my selection for the first team yet against Glasgow Rangers, so be very careful.
Be very, very careful. But Harry, what do you enjoy most about being part of DG Pro FC?
I enjoy just playing and just really just playing for a team that I know that will win. And
I like the fact that you've said will win. I like that, Dale. So helps. You've instilled that in them already. They're already wanting to be winners. But Harry, how long have you been playing football? You're 11 years of age. How long have you been playing?
Well, I started playing football with Dale when I was four, and still play with him now.
7 years. So you've seen it is amazing, this Dale. And again, not to labour on this point, but we've heard from Eric there. He's been with you 6 years. Little Harry here, from the age of 4 to 11, and jokes aside, it must feel a bit like family.
Absolutely, and I think that's the reason why, as a group, you know, it's not just about the football. We all had to get together as well, two or three weeks ago, and had a lovely barbecue around one of the parents' houses as well. And it was just a real nice get together, you know, talking about not just about what's happening with their training and the matches at the moment, but also talking about the tour as well. And as Harry mentioned there, and Eric as well, you know, Ali as well, he's been with us. Samuel, Matchy at the back there, who've been with our under 13s team. I've known them ever since, you know, like I said, like 6 or 7 years, you know, coaching these boys. And yes, we have boys that have left and they've gone back to maybe the UK. They've travelled because, as you know, Dubai have been a very sort of transitional place. But what we have got, though, and a lot of it is word of mouth as well from parents, you know, that the fact that we don't go out there advertising, you know, and that like who we are and saying we're the best and we can do this, we can do that. It's more of sort of word of mouth from other parents talking to other parents who've got children in a similar situation where they feel they were looking for a football club, and this is what we can offer. And you know, like you said, you know, we're on the radio, so they can't see how splendidly well turned out they are today. And this is what we are. We you know, we make sure that they've all got the white trainers, they've all got the black shorts, they've all got a travel. They even travel away with obviously luggage as well, which is all supplied by us as well. So we make these guys feel like professional footballers. It's like getting to the other side as well, Chris. When we get to Glasgow, these boys will be picked up by the Glasgow Rangers first team coach. You know, so it's a great opportunity for all of them. And Glasgow Rangers, obviously being one of my old teams as well, are really pushing out all the stops for these boys to have an unbelievable trip.
We will get to that trip in just a moment. Just on that, and about the professionalism that you're setting, I think you've said something interesting. It's not just what these boys are doing on the pitch, it's how they conduct themselves off it as well. I'll ask you this question, Eric. What's the best thing for you? What's the best thing about being part of DG Pro FC?
Just like playing together as a team, and like, because we've been together for so long, we know how each other, how we play together. So we know like where to pass, what's going to be the movement. Like, we just know how the other person's going to play.
And Harry, Dale's got nothing to do with that. So what Eric's saying there is, you already know how to play. Dale's just the cheerleader for you on the sidelines. You already know how to play your football because you know each other. Do all of you guys, do you socialise? Do you play with each other away from the football field as well?
Most of us are friends outside of the football team as well, but we all know each other quite well.
And what position do you play?
I can play anywhere.
Oh, but like that. Lionel Messi. I love that. One or two shaking their heads at that, Harry. You can play anywhere. Where's your favourite position?
Centre-back.
You look a little small, diminutive centre-half. I like that. You'll be like a little Bobby Moore. That's what I'm going to call you, Harry. You're going down as Bobby Moore. Eric, where do you play?
Play centre mid.
Centre mid. Are you good?
I like to say so.
Are you getting some thumbs up from some of your teammates as well? How good are these kids as a bunch? Not just as footballers, Dale, but how good are they?
They're exceptional, Chris. They really are. Every single one of them. There's boys that are not here today, but I can't speak highly enough of them. You know the way they've, you know, the way they approach the game, the way that they listen for the feedback. It's all constructive feedback as well. It's not. You know. Shouting and screaming at the touchline. If we feel that one of the boys is doing and finding times things a little bit difficult in the game environment, we'll pull them to one side and ask them and tell them that, you know, this is what you need to be doing, yeah, or this is how you can do better in that situation or in that phase of the game. And you know, everyone, like it's mentioned at the top of the show, we do have some collectively as a team, they're exceptional. They really are exceptional, and that goes by, you know, with their achievements this year and also as well last year. As individuals, you know, I can't speak high enough of every single one of them. And yes, we do have three or four exceptional, who I would say that going on this tour, they have a chance to be invited back. The nice thing about, and some of the boys don't know this and the parents, but we'll be sitting down with Glasgow Rangers as well and getting an affiliation with Glasgow Rangers and DG Pro. So therefore, you know, in the coming months as well, if they have a good tour, they will get invited back to the to Glasgow Rangers, maybe for a 2 or 3 week trial in the summer as well. And I know it's difficult because we're so many miles away, but we'll keep an eye on their progress and get that feedback to Glasgow Rangers, and hopefully one of them, too, you never know, touch wood, might get a scholarship.
That's the voice of Dale Gordon. A big shout out to he, a big shout out to his partner Kimmy, all the parents as well. We're going to come back, continue this conversation, because it's not just about what's going on here. As Dale's alluded to, there is a big tour upcoming. We want to get details on that, and also I want to get Dale's thoughts on youth development here. We had Waleed Al-Hassani, the CEO of the Arabian Gulf League, in our studios last week. He was talking about grassroots and pathways. We'll get the boys' thoughts on all of that. Keep it locked right here on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
This is the place to catch your sporting needs. So much going on throughout the day. English Premier League action, a big featured match on Dubai Eye 103.8. It is Manchester United against Watford. You've got Barcelona against Espanyol, that one kicking off at 7:15. There's IPL, there's the Bahrain Grand Prix, the Miami Open final in the world of tennis, there's the WGC match play in the world of golf. And if all of that wasn't enough, you've got the Champions Cup quarter-final weekend in the rugby. Matthew Fortune alongside myself today. He's keeping an eye on the early kickoff in the English Premier League. It is Fulham against Manchester City. Half time.
Yes, Chris, and as expected, Man City going at the break 2-0 up. A goal for Bernardo Silva early on, a mistake at the back from Fulham, and then a second goal from Sergio Aguero, another mistake from Fulham. That doesn't tell the whole story. There was about 10-15 minutes where Fulham looked good. Ryan Sessegnon making inroads down the left, but a look at the stats tells you this has only been one-way traffic. 12 efforts off target, 6 on target for City, and just 3 off target for the home side. I don't see this one changing in the second
half.
Bit
of a bloodbath, to be fair. Fulham 0, Manchester City 2, Bernardo Silva and Sergio Aguero on the score sheet. Let's welcome the main man back into the conversation. If you are just tuning in, we are in conversation with a good friend of ours, the former Norwich, Rangers, West Ham, Bournemouth midfielder, the winger. What was your fee again, Dale, back in 1964 or whenever it was that you signed for Rangers? 1.2 million?
Yeah, 1.2 million in 91. Oh. And then I went from Glasgow Rangers to West Ham for just under a million.
Oh, my goodness. What a player you were back in the day. You're still Delia Smith, owner of Norwich. You're still her favourite player.
Still her favourite player. Some of the boys we took back to Norwich last year witnessed the fact that Delia came up to me and gave me a massive hug. Who's this lady? I went, oh, it's a long story, boys. It's a long story.
The voice of Dale Gordon. He's alongside us, and he's got his squad alongside him as well. DG Pro FC. It is Dale's football academy out here. His kids doing wonders. They have got a reputation as being one of the very best teams in all of Dubai for their age group. You're taking the boys away, Dale. You were telling us, you were hinting at that fact. Give us the full itinerary. What are the boys going to be up to in their spring break?
Well, we're travelling early hours on Tuesday morning, 7 o'clock flight from Dubai into Glasgow, and literally as soon as we get to the airport the other side, we're straight on the coach to Ibrox for a Graham tour. The boys will have a really, really nice lunch. I'll see if Dealey can come up to fly from Norwich to cook it for us, just to say hello. But so we've got a Graham tour, and then it's lunch for the boys, and then back to the hotel for them to be settled. We'll have a team meeting, and then obviously prepare for the next sort of 10 days.
Four games in total. I'm looking at here, you're taking on Queen's Park. It says TBC on the venue. Yeah. No chance of you phoning up and getting Hampden?
Well, I think it'll be on mini Hampden. That's where we're looking to play. Because
fantastic.
I think Queen's Park Academy is run behind Hampden. We will be spending a day at Hampden and the football museum. Oh. That'll be a lovely day out for the boys.
It certainly is.
So it starts off, you know, really, really full on. Obviously, we've got the Glasgow, we've got Rangers versus Hearts. We know that Rangers are playing the Old Firm derby tomorrow against Celtic. So if
you're
they manage to get,
match?
I'll be watching the game. Yeah, I'll be watching the game. But I think that if Rangers get 3 points tomorrow, that'll you know, set up a really, really good game on Wednesday against Hearts. You know, and it'll be a difficult game.
But, and you're going to be there, the boys?
Yeah, the boys will be there.
Fantastic.
The boys will be there. Yeah. So there is, hopefully, fingers crossed. I can't say anything because they're all listening. They're all looking at me now. But there's hopefully a lovely little surprise well for them on the night of the game.
Okay, so say no more. I think I know where you're going at with that. But four games in total. Queen's Park, Rangers Elite, you'll be taking on as well. Also Hamilton Academical, who are a top flight club in Scotland. And, of course, Kilmarnock, who have been going great guns. Their senior team, anyway, under the former Chelsea assistant boss of Steve Clarke, lest we forget. Let's bring some more boys into the conversation now, if we can. I want to turn to you, Ali. Ali, nice to see you. Excited for the trip over to Scotland. And please tell me you're going to be wrapping up warm. You've got some coats looked out.
Yeah.
It's going to be cold. What's the thing that you're most looking forward to with this trip?
The matches.
The matches. You're going up against Rangers Elite, Hamilton, Kilmarnock, Queen's Park. Which team are you most looking forward to coming up against?
Queen's Park Rangers.
Queen's Park. Right, so Queen's Park it is you're coming up against. I would say Rangers Elite is the one that I'm most excited for you. But Queen's Park, nonetheless, let's bring Daniel into the conversation as well. Left back, Daniel, I've got a funny feeling that we've spoken before as well. You excited for this trip?
Yeah, very.
Who are you most looking forward to going up against?
Queen's Park as well.
Queen's Park as well. Everyone's Queen's Park.
It's the first game. I teach these boys to make sure you just focus on the first game.
I see that, Dale.
Forget about the next game, Glasgow Rangers and Kilmarnock and Hamilton. You know, let's just focus on the first game.
That's true. I like what you've done there.
Daniel. The nice thing as well, though, Chris, Daniel and Ali went last year to England as well and play against Norwich City and Ipswich. It was certainly an eye-opener as well. And you touched on there about the elite team for Glasgow Rangers. And when we played against Norwich, it was their development squad. And I think the boys then all of a sudden, they thought, this is a breeze. And then we were up against Ipswich Town. And they were unbelievable. They really were. I mean, I think it was their elite stroke academy. But the boys did say to me, can't believe the size of the players, you know. And it was a... it was a shock to the system, but it's all part of their development. It's not about going over there and think that we're the big I am, we do so well in Dubai. It's about going over there and learning the understanding of the game abroad and understanding the fact that you will play against these boards. And if you want to take that next step into that next level, this is what we're all about.
From what you know, will Rangers Elite be the biggest test that these boys have
100%.
Faced?
100%. Absolutely 100%. We're not saying that Kilmarnock or Queen's Park or Hamilton will be a breeze, because they'll just be just as tough. We know that. And the nice thing about the Hamilton game and the Kilmarnock, they will be playing at the main stadiums as well. So where the first team play for Hamilton and Kilmarnock, these boys will be performing there. And the elite team at Glasgow Rangers, because not just playing them, they've got 8 training sessions as well with Glasgow Rangers as well. They'll be learning about
busy recovery,
dietary, nutrition. They've been doing classroom work as well, so it's a full on schedule.
I see the plan. It's to get these boys to be sleeping in their beds by 6 o'clock, and you and the parents can then enjoy yourselves. Is that the plan, Dale?
That was back in the day in 91. That was.
Listen, I want to bring another young man into the conversation now, because regular listeners will know that I sometimes say that I'm a goalkeeper. Matthew Fortune, I've seen him in goals. He is most certainly not a goalkeeper, but this young man, I am reliably informed, is a goalkeeper. It's Isaac. Isaac, nice to see you. Welcome to the grill. What are you most looking forward to about this trip?
Probably watching all the games and like having an English, proper English atmosphere.
Oh, nice. Yeah, the atmosphere, because I guess that's one thing that we miss here a little bit. It's an English, it's I'll let him off with that. It's a Scottish, it's a British.
He's on a different tour. He's going to England, we've gone to Scotland.
Who are you travelling with, Isaac? I want to know that. But that's an interesting point you make, because have you ever been to a game over in the UK before?
No.
Okay, so the atmosphere. Well, you are in for a treat, because Ibrox. It's at Ibrox Rangers Hearts on Wednesday?
Yeah, Ibrox. I mean, last year there was 26,000 at Norwich against Fulham. And again, it was just literally coming from Heathrow on the coach to Carrow Road to watch Norwich City against Fulham. 26,000 and great atmosphere. These boys, they'll be double. It'll be 55,000 at Ibrox, so it's a double the size of the stadium.
Well, I've got to say, Dale, I tip my hat to you, I tip my hat to Kimmy, I tip my hat to all the parents. These boys have sat, they have listened intently, polite young men. You're trying to obviously develop them as young men, is what they are as well. For anyone listening, Dale, and again, I'm conscious of time here, but the grassroots, is enough being done? Are you happy? Certainly from your side of things, clearly happy. Business is good, strong. These kids are developing the way that you want them to develop. In terms of grassroots across the board, more need to be done?
More needs to be done, I think, in the professional environment. Yeah, 100%. We know that the professional game here has not been going that long, you know, regards to what's been happening around the world. I think it's only 10, maybe 11 years old. So I think that everything, all the finances were all pumped into the professional game here, and everything else got left behind. So the development of youth football, it was a massive gap, and I think the pro clubs can do an awful lot more. You touched on previous shows as well, on a Monday night show as well, Chris, that, you know, the stadiums are very scarce. There's hardly anybody that actually goes to them. I went to the game with Al Nassr and Arsenal. 15,000 people there.
Fantastic.
It was incredible. Great atmosphere. But, you know, why can't we create that? You know, at the moment, we're at Barassi, we're on the grill, and we're watching Manchester City versus Fulham. That is basically what everybody likes to watch. But I think here in the UAE, there is a potential to obviously get youth football, all the academies involved in the professional game, and get them to have a pathway into their first team or through their youth system. Because obviously we have now to travel 3,500 miles away to have a 10-day tour, whereas really, locally, we can do a lot more.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Dale, bless you, my man. Doing great stuff, as are the many coaches, and I'm sure many of them will be tuned in this afternoon. Power to you and all the work that's going on.
Thank you very much. Can I just make one more mention as well to Kim as well for Red Carpet Events UAE? She's the spine, if you like, with this tour. You know, she's from the matter of, like, you know, 6 months ago of doing the presentation to where we are now. You know, if it wasn't for Kim and Red Carpet Events, we wouldn't be sitting here. So big up to Red Carpet Events. Boys, can you just turn around? I know we're on the radio, but just give Kim a massive round of applause.
Loving that, Dalio. Loving it. And that tells you that there's an awful lot of people here. One big shout out left from me, boys. And I know we're on radio. Everyone will turn their volumes down if they're not enjoying this, but hopefully they'll stick with us. A big shout now. DG Pro FC. After three, DG Pro FC, okay? 3, 2, 1.
DG Pro FC.
There we go. The boys are on tour. Looking forward to seeing how it all goes on, boys. Enjoy it. You will have the time of your life. And please, 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 someone keep an eye on Dale. We do not want Dale on any dance floors in Glasgow, okay?
Chris, I'll be dancing if they go and beat Elite, Rangers Elite, that's for sure.
I'm sure you will.
Dale Jose Gordon. Mourinho dance at Old Trafford for Porto. watch out, watch this space.
I cannot wait for that, and I'm looking forward to see what surprise you've got in store for the boys as well. Good luck, lads. Enjoy the next 10 days. It will be the time of your life, and we're looking forward to welcoming you back on this show. You're listening to The Grill. When we come back, we're round the grounds, I should say. Full updates on the way. Stay tuned.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to the show. A big thanks to Dale Gordon, to all the kids as well for DG Pro FC. We wish them well. A 10-day camp, and Matt Fortune was just remarking off air. It is remarkable living in Dubai, and Dale and Kim and all the team, what a job they have done to put an itinerary together that encompasses four games. They're going to be training at Murray Park, which is Rangers' world-class training facility. Eight training sessions, I think, in total. Various VIP events dotted around Glasgow as well. You were just remarking upon when you were a young wee nipper, your four-day trip took you to Bognor Regis.
Not just Bognor Regis, though, the Butlins in Bognor. So to any British people that are listening, that was, I mean, to be honest, as an 11-year-old kid, it was absolutely brilliant. But upon reflection, going 2 hours down the road to Butlins in Bognor was not the sort of football tour that was I should signed up for.
Mark Archer, 1920s. What were you doing then as a young nipper?
I was extremely fortunate that I've been on some great sporting tours as a kid. Toured Australia on a cricketing tour at school, first 11 tour, but I was pretty young, so...
I get the feeling Arch was better at sport than we were.
Than you and I combined.
So, had a cricketing tour to Australia, which was great, and then I went on lots of representative weeks, whether I was playing several sports, but cricket, we went on some great festival weeks, and then I was playing a lot of basketball at the time, so we had some wonderful tournaments as well.
Just to widen the conversation out a little bit, if we can, I'd love to hear from you guys on this. Parents out there, people who are perhaps closer to the grassroots, the formative stage of sports out here in the region. Just want to get your thoughts. Arch, I always say to you and tell our listeners, you have been in the sponsorship marketing world for a long time. There hasn't been a big sporting event that you haven't been to, whether it's an official capacity, whether it's a fan capacity. You've lived out here for a decade now?
12 years.
12 years veteran is what you are.
Where's it gone?
Grassroots sport here. What are you seeing? What conversations are you hearing? I keep hearing that the big companies are now, maybe just maybe, that they're not bored with your Abu Dhabi HSBC Championships or your Dubai World Cups, but the proportion of funds is starting to seep down into grassroots. Is that reality, or am I just talking nonsense?
I think so. I think we live in a country where it's such a diversity of backgrounds and nationalities that it's quite hard if you're a corporate sponsor to try and find your right audience, because it's such a diverse audience. So we do see, you talk about HSBC and you talk about Golf Championship, but HSBC, we'll use as an example, they've done a lot in rugby festivals. Yes. with 200 teams of kids from all over the world take part of it, and they're involved in the rugby sevens as well. So I think a lot of companies want to market their products and services to that wide demographic. Football is a great one because, again, so many walks of life, so many kids from not just the local region but globally play football at the age group level. And so you can penetrate into the kids, you get your product and service across, but you also start speaking to the parents as well. It's a good way to capture two lots there. So I think, sports in particular is I'm a big advocate of sports marketing and sports sponsorship by creating an emotional attachment. A lot of companies, let's face it, banks are really boring. Insurance companies are really boring.
Glad you said it.
No, they are. And the way that you get an emotional attachment with your audience is you attach yourself to something that is quite cool and fun and enjoyable and people are emotional about. And that's why companies basically sponsor sport full stop. So that form of associated marketing there gives them a platform to speak to an audience on an emotional level, which is hard to find through some normal sort of forms of advertising and marketing, whether it be outdoors, even digital to a degree. And Matt can probably talk to this. Digital is hard still to find an emotional connection. Yeah. I think unless you find a form of social media that people are really engaged with, then it's quite difficult to really find that audience and attract them. And I think sports marketing can cut through the clutter if done properly, if activated properly. You can speak to your audience and become relevant.
Matthew, you are in the corporate world these days. You have crossed over to the dark side. So, Luke, I am your father, Luke. Talk to us about the sport. Corporate, from what your understanding of it is, are corporations looking at grassroots, or is it still the top tier that
Yeah, it's still very much at the top tier. For just from my very limited exposure to it, the exposure that I have had actually on the level of academies is I run a football club in the Dubai Amateur Football League, and when we started 3 years ago, you start in the bottom division, and within that division are a number of academy sides and they're filled with kids aged 16 to 18, 19, 20 years of age. And as we've touched upon, my football skills are limited at best, which is why I run the club rather than playing it all too often. But some of the talent on show there, and there have been a couple of occasions where, I mean, adults of my age, you know, 28 to 35, just having rings run around them by really talented kids, but properly talented, as in composed on the ball, understand the game. And I've spoken to a couple of managers when we were being battered about 4-5-0 by essentially a bunch of kids. And it's because there's a real focus at that level at the grassroots, so not necessarily the money that's coming in, but from the individuals involved in it. Because, and this may be a little bit wrong, is that kids don't have necessary school sports. They have to attend some sort of after school sports, which I think is brilliant. And those, and the level of coaching and the likes of Dale Gordon, an ex-professional, that's actually not uncommon to have someone like that that's in charge of coaching, that's done their UEFA badges, and the talent is really there. And when they're grown properly and they're home, Dale's saying there that his kids train 3 times a week and play another game on top of that. And what we need, that I think the interest will come from a marketing level and budget level, is when we have that breakout star. I know a number of kids that I've played against and now got scholarships to US universities, but on the basis of their football skills. I'm sure it happens in other sports. It's when we get that breakout, and I think that's the case for a number of things. You even look at the professional game here. Once we get a star that's born and raised here, trained here, grown here, become a professional here, makes that big step into one of Europe's big five leagues, or even into the MLS at that level, that is when we'll start to see the money come in, I think. And it's certainly, the talent is there, the roots are definitely there, the education in the States, the education in England is certainly there for kids that have the sporting scholarship capabilities, and I really can't wait for it to happen.
Yeah, the pathways are there. They have been the buzzword, certainly in the last 12 months. I cannot tell you how many emails I've received from various corporations, academies, talking about pathways. There's no doubt investment is there, there is an interest in there. The biggest thing for me, and I'll add my tuppence worth to this, the biggest thing for me that is still, it's evolving, it's coming slowly, it's structure from top to bottom, it's uniform structure. Dale's doing a wonderful job. Dale needs to be talking to the UEFA a lot more. The Arabian Gulf League needs to have a two-way communication with your Dale Gordons of this world. There needs to be more uniform structure so that at the top level, which in my kind of limited knowledge, the top level is your FA, is your Football Association, is your Rugby Union Federation, is your Cricket Association or whatever. They need to have full autonomy. They need to have full control. There needs to be a database where all of these kids are being monitored across the board so that they can be kept an eye on to one day, whether they want to or not, represent the UAE. And if they don't want to represent the UAE, then they can go on and represent the countries of their parents' birth if they are expats.
You're absolutely right, Chris. One example that I will tell you, which shows exactly what you're saying, that there is that big gap, and you'll tell me the name. Who is the young lad?
Yahya Ali.
Exactly. I have played against him in the Dubai Amateur Football League less than 18 months ago. And he's a phenomenal talent.
Starting for Al Wahda.
So, and that to me is absolutely insane. I mean, I'd like to, all of us, the players that play on my team, like to think we're quite good, but he was miles better than us. Why on earth is he, 18, 19 years of age?
I think 20 years of age now.
What on earth is he doing playing in the second division of the Dubai Amateur Football League? And then, like that, is now playing in the UAE top division.
Yeah.
It is crazy that there is not better scouting systems, that there's not that filtration, there's not a genuine pathway. The pathways I was talking about, away from Dubai, away from the UAE, into the States, into the US, why on earth isn't it happening here?
Yeah, absolutely. 4001, if you want to wade in to this discussion, there's still so much more to it, of course, but there is no doubt some unbelievable individuals out there doing wonderful job in any chosen sport, whether it be cricket, whether it be rugby, whether it be golf, whether it be tennis. I know an awful lot of time and effort has been put in by a range of individuals. Dale, of course, one of those, and there's another loads more, hundreds of thousands of people across the globe, of course, at grassroots level. Let us know your thoughts on 4001. We're keeping an eye on the live sport. We're going to be catching up as well with Tom Uckert down at Maidan Racecourse. If you have forgotten, it is the Dubai World Cup. It is a Saturday, a beautiful day down here at the Barasti rooftop garden. The boys have stuck around as well, which is nice to see. Mark Archer, want to talk a little bit of rugby for the next 15 minutes or so as well. The Rugby Six Nations concluded a fortnight or so ago. I caught up this week with Brad Shields and Joe Launchbury. We'll hear from them in just a moment. Give us a quick update though, because it is quarter final weekend in the Champions Cup.
Yeah, three quarterfinal matches this afternoon. The first early kickoff is in Edinburgh. The home team are hosting Munster, and I can tell you that Edinburgh lead Munster just after halftime, 10 points to 7. Christine has scored the one try for Edinburgh. Keith Earls has the reply for Munster. So 10-7, the Edinburgh lead Munster just going into the second half. Late kickoffs see Saracens at home to Glasgow Warriors, and then over in Dublin, Leinster will face Ulster. Just to give you a bit of Super Rugby update, wins yesterday in Super Rugby for the Crusaders and the Sunwolves. Earlier today, the Blues defeated the Stormers 24 points to 9. And in Queensland, the Rebels, the Melbourne Rebels, defeated the Queensland Reds 32 points to 13. And one live match taking place in Super Rugby is in Durban at the Shark Tank. And it's the South African Derby. They're taking on the Bulls from Pretoria. And it's the Sharks that trail the Bulls 6 points to 3 with 4 minutes to go in the first half.
Keep an eye on the early kickoff as well. Fantasy football fans, you may want to listen up because Matthew Fortune is about to break your heart.
There's no been further troubling of the scorers, but there will be trouble for people trying to get a score in fantasy football, and that is because Sergio Aguero, we're still trying to find out why he has been substituted, replaced by Gabby Jesus. We're an hour into the game, so there'll be no more troubling of the scorers at Craven Cottage for the Argentinian. Will the Brazilian step up and make a difference? So far, it's all City in this second half, as we expected, but the score remains 2-0.
Being wrapped in cotton wool is Sergio Aguero ahead of Cardiff in midweek. At least that is what I hope, given the fact of triple captaindom. Stay tuned to Dubai 103.8. You are listening to The Grill on your Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening. We're live down to the Meyrin Racecourse just after six. When we come back, an exclusive with two big burly blokes. It's Brad Shields and Joe Launchbury. I've been in conversation with the two behemoths of England rugby. You'll hear from them in a moment.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hop lunch combo.
Right then, let's get a quick update on the live action. The Bahrain Grand Prix, the second race of the 2019 season, qualifying begins at 7 o'clock, so we will just be getting off air when it gets underway. Sebastian Vettel was the quickest in second practice. We'll get an update on who was fastest in third and final practice in just a moment. Let's get a quick update though. Early kickoff in the Premier League, it's Fulham City.
Yeah, and still 2-0, Chris. We're about 63 minutes gone. A little bit of a shout for a penalty for Manchester City. That would have been the second one that Raheem Sterling has seen turned down. But ultimately, it's one-way traffic without really causing too many problems for the goalkeeper, Steven Rico, in Fulham's goal. But still 2-0.
Indian Premier League cricket, I am, of course, talking about. Mark Archer's all over it.
Yeah, first of today's two matches is in Chandigarh. It's Mumbai Indians taking on the Kings XI Punjab. Mumbai batted first. They scored 176 for 7. Top scorer was Quinton de Kock with 60 for the South African opener. In reply, Kings XI, I think, are firmly in control. 147 for 2 after 15.4 of their 20 overs. So they need 30 more runs. They have 8 wickets in hand. KL Rahul is leading from the front. He is 42 not out. He's the man in command of the run chase. So it looks like Kings XI Punjab in the driving seat there. The late match in the IPL this evening starts at 6:30 in Delhi. That's UAE time. It's the Capitals, the home team, hosting the Calcutta Knight Riders. The Knight Riders undefeated so far. They're 2 from 2.
They are. The IPL is alive and kicking. And been watching much of it, Arch? I've got to be honest and say I've not seen an awful lot of it. It's been on the TV whilst we've been on air with Off Script during the week.
I've caught bits of it, I must say. I mean, it's 60 something matches before they get to the elimination. I tend to tune in a bit more towards the business end before the playoffs when it's getting interesting, the top four teams. I keep an eye on it, see who's doing what, but I'm not watching a lot, if that makes sense.
Let's talk rugby if we can. The Six Nations caught an awful lot of attention, so it did, during its duration. Wales, Grand Slam winners for a third time under Warren Gatland. What an achievement that was. You, as an All Black fan, you quaking in your boots ahead of the World Cup later this year?
I would say I'm quaking in my boots. I think the three teams in the Northern Hemisphere probably pose the most threat.
England,
to
Ireland,
the All Blacks.
Wales.
Yeah, and to be fair, I don't think there's a lot between all those three teams. There's small margins between Ireland, England and Wales. Wales were fortunate in the sense that they had the two toughest matches they had at home this year in Cardiff. So they played Ireland at home, they played England at home. But they were convincing. I mean, let's fair. The final match when they had to win it was all on the line against Ireland. Ireland, they outplayed them off the park. They were outcoached, they were out-strategy. And they played a great second half against England at home in Cardiff. So for me, fully deserved. They were the best team over the championship, but really small margins between all those three teams. I would say, still though, going to a World Cup on neutral territory, take Cardiff element, I still fancy England and Ireland to be the stronger of the two teams. I don't know why. I just think they've got some more big name players than I think Wales have. I think that's my gut feeling as much as anything.
Two men were over in this part of the world. They still are. I think they fly out tomorrow, so they do. Brad Shields and Joe Launchbury, two absolute belting blokes, I've got to say that. Two huge blokes as well, represent England. They were down at Jumeirah Beach Hotel. I know you spent a bit of time with them as well, Matt. And lovely little touch this, before we hear from both men, an exclusive interview this on The Grill with both Brad Shields and Joe Launchbury. Lovely little story concerning the Dubai Hurricanes.
Yeah, well, this was great. I found this out this morning, actually. So the two lads have been staying at Jumeirah Beach Hotel, which has a tie-up with the Dubai Hurricanes.
Ooh.
Hurricanes were hosting their end of season do at the hotel, and Joe Launchbury and Brad Shields both caught wind of this, and they asked if they could come along and make the presentations.
Brilliant.
Just to give it a little bit of something about, they had absolutely no need to do it. There was no responsibility to do anything like that. I don't even think they'd spoken to anybody about it. They just caught wind of it. They'd seen it being set up at the events arena, decided to pop down at 9 o'clock on their penultimate day of their holiday and do a little bit of a meet and greet with the kids and present some awards.
That's class act, that is. So it is. I spent about an hour with them on Thursday. I've got to say, two top blokes, and I did joke to them that it makes it very difficult, me as a proud Scot, to actually detest and to hate and dislike England rugby team when you've got two blokes like these two. Let's get into this, because I started with Brad. It was a conversation the three of us had. I began with Brad asking him to look back on what was a bit of a trying 6 weeks for England in that Rugby Six Nations, individually, collectively, and he had this to say.
I think you got to look at it in two different ways. Like, yeah, towards the end, the last game, we sort of didn't see the result going that way, but as a group, collectively, I think we're making great strides in the way we play, the way we train, the tightness of our group and all that sort of stuff. So you've got to take the positives out of that, and it's a great team to be a part of, and you can see every week the fans, and you get a sold out stadium is pretty awesome no matter who you're playing. So you must be doing something right, and it's just a pleasure to be a part of. And personal performance, obviously, got a couple of goes, and just to get on the paddock and play 1 minute is amazing. To get a full game in there is a bonus. So, like, just to be out on the field and be a part of the group is awesome.
You talk there about Twickenham, Fortress Twickenham, as it's known. Certainly up in Scotland, we've not won there since 1983, for goodness sake. It's a full house, Joe. It's a full house, whether you play come rain or shine, Twickenham. The pressure, does that seep through to the players? I mean, because there's one school of thought to say, listen, it makes us play better. There's another school of thought to say that it can become a bit of a burden. Where does it sit with you?
I think that's international rugby for everyone, really. I think there's always a pressure to perform, and we certainly notice that as playing for England. It's as Brad talked about then, it's a fantastic privilege that we're very lucky to do and very lucky to have at the moment. So we fully enjoy that. Playing at Twickenham's fantastic. It's my favourite place to play. It's great to go there and play in front of your home support. But in terms of pressure, it's more of a privilege to play, and obviously expectation to win when you play for England, as you're always kind of expected to win no matter who you play against. That's kind of what we've kind of always tried and push for as a team. We try and strive to be the best team we can be. So there's a bit of pressure on ourselves, but we probably put maybe more on ourselves than what we receive externally.
Yeah, what about the pressure that you've put on yourselves? Whenever I talk to, and I've been very fortunate to talk to a raft of rugby boys, and the one thing that strikes me more than any other sport is the responsibility with which you boys put on yourselves. Forget the coaching staff. It's you boys that cross the white line. It's you boys that have to go out there and perform. The culture in that dressing room, is it about taking responsibility?
I think it's more about nailing your side of the deal and understanding your role in the team and how you can make the team better, and that ultimately will drive the culture, and the way we get on with each other off the pitch obviously affects where we are on the pitch. And I think you put a lot of pressure on yourself because you want to play the best you possibly can. You don't want to let the team down, and that's probably a simple fact, is that you just want to do your best you can, and when you put the jersey on, is do it a justice and make sure you're putting the right foot forward, because at the end of the day, if you're not winning, then sometimes you look at yourself a bit more than the team, sort of thing.
Collectively, Six Nations campaign, as I've already touched on, perhaps not being quite what it was. You're of course looking for a Grand Slam, you're looking for success. When you reflect on it, where did you perhaps let yourselves down, Joe?
Yeah, I think you look at it back now in terms of results, and obviously we went into the competition clear, like every team does, wanting to win the Six Nations, and that was obviously a target for us, and we made no point of hiding that. But looking back now, we probably came unstuck maybe in only two parts across the whole five games. Our second half in Cardiff against Wales, and then our second half against Scotland, really. So across the whole five matches, we felt we've actually come a long way as a team. We've actually improved. If you go back 12 months to the Six Nations last year, the improvements we've made as a squad over the last 12 months, going through the November series at Twickenham and then into the Six Nations, we feel we've come a long way and improved a lot. But as you said, those few little margins we came unstuck in the second half against Wales and Scotland is enough to derail your championship, and that's why everyone loves international rugby, I think. Just small little drops in your performance can only be small amounts in a couple of different areas, and that's enough between winning and losing. So it's a great lesson for us as a squad. Hopefully we can really take the good bits that we got out, Ireland away and in some of the other games especially. I feel like we play some of the best rugby we've maybe played for a long time. So there's definitely lots of positives there, but always stuff to work on, and it's a great year to get these things out of the way now, get the lessons out of the way, and hopefully come what's coming at the end of the year, we can hit the ground running.
What is the mood like, Brad? Because, again, I say this as a Scotsman, and don't swing from it when I say this, but since you made your debut June, I think it was, last year down in South Africa, it's been 9-10 months. What is the mood like? At what point does the talking stop? Because this England team was talked about. If we rewind 2 years ago, my goodness, the All Blacks, it was going to be an England World Cup. A little bit of a wobble in the last 10 months. Panic's probably a too strong a word. But you boys will be aware that yous are being talked about as being potential World Cup candidates. What is the mood? Are yous thinking, listen, we got to stop talking about this. We need to ensure that the half against Wales doesn't happen, the half against Scotland doesn't happen, we've got to nail this down and nail this down now.
Yeah, like Joe said, it was just a couple of areas that we talked about it after the Scotland game. It's just we've got to improve in how we deal with those situations, because it's going to get thrown at us in other games, obviously. But you talk about people talking about England, but I think we've come to a point where we're just focusing that week in, week out sort of rugby mentality, and Eddie's really good at driving that sort of stuff each week, and whatever's happening externally is not affecting us so much, because we're so focused on doing well that week in the moment that we just want to do well there. So I guess there's always going to be pressures when you're going, you know, you're playing decent rugby and, you know, sort of people losing, other people winning. So it almost feels a little bit even at the moment between different teams. So but I think there's always going to be the pressure, people talking about it. It's just how you deal with it as a collective and individually. And I think, I could be wrong in saying this, but I think we're dealing with it pretty well. And I mean, you're probably the first person to mention it to me anyway. So, you know, people are going to try and talk you up and try and get the, you know, the scoop or whatever it is. But I just feel like we're in a really good position. And as you say, since June, South Africa, we had that little bit of wobble, couple of losses that we probably should have won. And I just think that's made us totally a better team. And you've just seen the growth from autumn to the Six Nations, and regardless of a couple of the results, the growth has been amazing leading into the World Cup.
Yeah, give us an insight. Scotland, and this will be the last time I mention them, you're 31-0 up. The momentum, we talk about it. Confidence and momentum are two buzzwords that I use all the time on my radio show. Once it happens, it is tangible. It is something that I would imagine you feel that, and you were saying off air, Joe, that yous were talking to one another. You're aware of it. It's a tidal wave coming, but you can't stop it. Give us an insight into the mentality at that point.
Well, like you said, momentum is constantly changing hands in rugby games, usually. And I think you always understand, you very rarely have that 80-minute dominant performance where you have momentum for the whole game. Even when you win a game by a comfortable margin, you'll lose momentum for various parts. The other team will have it for a bit, and it's about getting that momentum back and seizing your opportunity again. And in the first half, everything all the moves we chucked at Scotland, everything we tried came off, and we scored quite a few tries. And then in the second half, it was pretty much the role reversal. They had nothing to lose. They came out, they scored early in the second half, and they were chipping, chasing. It was falling to their hands, and that was momentum, and it's clear as day for everyone to see. And like I said earlier, we were saying the right stuff. We were constantly thinking about our next job and how we can sort of stop this, and areas of the game we needed to tighten up on, what wasn't going quite so well. But sometimes when it's that powerful, I actually believe we did pretty well to stick in there at the end and get that try at the end to get the draw. It was obviously far from the result we were set out to get, and the result which looked like was going to happen at half time. But it was a funny old game, and I think for somebody to come and watch that and see that purely from a neutral point of view, I think that's probably why everyone loves sports so much, because it's never completely over. But for us, some great lessons for us to learn, some great stuff in there, great performance first half, and it was a fantastic lesson for us, the players, player group, because you're the ones on there on the pitch to do it yourselves. And for us to have learnt that experience now, Hopefully we can learn from that and let it not happen again.
The voice there of Joe Launchbury. We're also joined as well by Brad Shields. That is, I can tell you, about a quarter of the chat that we've had. You will hear more as we go throughout this week. Some fascinating stuff on Eddie Jones. Brad Shields as well, you will also hear, he's got an accent like Mark Archer. That is because he is a Kiwi. He is now playing for England. His parents were born in England. He waited patiently for his chance at the All Blacks. It wasn't forthcoming, and he explains in detail the reasons for his move over to England. More from both Joe and Brad as we go throughout Off Script extra time this week. The words were there, just not in the right order.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.